Morning. Oh, there's a bit of a muted response. Good morning. Morning. Thank you. It's nice to be back with you. Last couple of weeks ago, we were up in Manchester with Jack. And last week, I had a bit of the lurgy, so I wasn't here last week. So it's nice to be back here now. So, and it's nice to see you all as well. Bobby, all right, just to pop the lights up a little bit for us, please. So, hands up if you are or you want to be happy. Keep them up. Hands up if you are or you want to be happy. Oh, take them up, Will. How are fine as ever. That's all right. Okay. Now, I was going to say, I don't know anyone who wants to be unhappy. But some of you didn't put your hands up. So, because what makes one person happy or what looks like happy to one person will look different to another, yeah? But I've never heard anybody say, you know what, I'm just too happy. Or, I just wish I was a bit unhappier. Yeah, I've never heard that. But what is it that makes us happy? Just think for a moment. What makes you happy? Just think for a moment. So many things that you'll be thinking of. No, you Puritans will be saying, my family, my health. But perhaps you're thinking, well, a new car would make me happy, or a luxurious holiday, or the latest phone or the latest gadget. Some people nod into that. Those are the things that make me happy. And of course, possessions and stuff, they can bring some happiness, but that's maybe for a time, because the new car gets old. The holiday comes to an end. It's got to be paid for. The next phone model's released. And the pursuit of happiness through those things, it starts again, doesn't it? And actually, they don't bring real happiness. Now, Jesus made some bold claims that turn our understanding or our vision of happiness, of a good life, on its head. Because Jesus said things like this. He said, the last will be first and the first will be last. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted, and bless those who curse you. But one of the most counterintuitive teachings of Jesus that goes against everything that we hear and perhaps even our intuition is his teaching on money and generosity, which is in chapter 20, verse 35. Because Jesus said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. So it goes against our understanding, doesn't it? See, that word translated to blessed is makarios in Greek. And it means happy, fortunate, or well off. And so that verse can also be translated to there's more happiness in giving than receiving in the Good News translation, or you're far happier giving than getting in the Message. So how does that make you feel this morning hearing that? I'm guessing for most people it won't be new information. It's something that you've heard before. Yes, you've kind of heard that before. But maybe it's not. Maybe it is the first time you're hearing it and you're thinking, really? Are you sure you got this one right, Jesus? And even if you're somebody who loves buying gifts, and we won't go into those people who love buying gifts to see the reaction of those that they've bought them for, talk about pressure in that situation. I've bought you a gift. I want to see your reaction when I open it. Oh, thank you very much. Is giving rather than receiving really the path to true happiness? Well, actually, all sorts of research from social sciences has shown that, guess what? Jesus is right. Yeah? Generous people are happier, healthier, have lower levels of depression and anxiety, they're more interested in personal growth, they have better relationships, they have a higher life expectancy, and according to one study, they laugh more. And it's true across every demographic, no matter your socioeconomic status, age, gender, ethnicity, personality. It's across the board. One study called The Link Between Generosity and Happiness, a Universal Feature of Human Psychology. And the sociologists Hilary Davidson and Christian Smith, in their book, The Paradox of Generosity, concluded, people rightly say that money cannot buy happiness, but money and happiness are still related in a curious way. Happiness can be the result not of spending more money on oneself, but rather of giving money away to others. And the data examined here show this not to be simply a nice idea, but scientific fact. So if you take an objective look at this evidence, it's clear that what we perhaps get taught in the West, that more money equals more happiness, just isn't true. It's not true. Rather, it's Jesus' formula that more generosity equals more happiness is what leads to a happy life. The Quaker, Richard Foster, writes this, the unreasoned boast abounds that the good life is found in accumulation, that more is better. Indeed, we often accept this notion without question, with the result that the lust for affluence in contemporary society has become psychotic. He has completely lost touch with reality. So this morning, as we start our new series on generosity, and if you've been around for Junction 10, you'll know that it's one of our core values, if you've been around for a while. And a few years ago, we spent a few weeks looking at each of our core values. I won't test you on the other four this morning. But we looked at generosity back in late 2017, over 7 years ago. And the podcasts are still available. And we looked at different expressions of generosity in money, forgiveness, hospitality, time, and there's other things such as power and influence. That was then. And if you say it today, and as you listen to this on a podcast, if you can be generous in any of those areas that we've just listed, then please do be. Please do be generous in those areas. And it might be at different stages of life, we can be different in different areas and in different ways. But in this series, we're going to focus on the generosity of money. And if you think about that, in addition to that series back in 2017, if you go back through the podcasts, which are available, you may recall that from time to time, we do spend the morning teaching on talking about money. Looking back through, it's probably once every 12 months or thereabouts. And the earliest podcast I can find is a message from Kevin entitled The Cheerful Giver from April 2016. Now, if you've got a spare 68 minutes, which is how long the podcast is, literally, this afternoon, he's not here, but Bridie can tell him, then that's available if you go back and listen to, and I'm sure we're all very cheerful at the end of that. Kev, take what you want, just stop it, I want to go home now, take all my money. So, we talk about money maybe once a year, but actually, if you look at Jesus' teaching, it's been calculated by scholars that around 25% of Jesus' teaching is on the subject of money and generosity. So can you imagine that? Once a month, it's the money talk. Once a month, you come in, it's the money talk. But let's be honest, money can be a bit of a challenging subject, can't it, for us? And actually, one scholar reports that 50% of Jesus' parables are about money, generosity, or stewardship. So clearly, although it's challenging, money, finance is a central issue for Jesus to Christian spirituality and discipleship. Now, as I said, money, finance can be challenging, and that's at both ends of the scales. Whether finances are a struggle, or in the words of the psalmist, money's too tight to mention, or maybe you have an embarrassment of riches and large disposable income at the other, it can be a challenge for us. You know, I had someone comment this week that, you know, you're kicking the series off. That's a tough one to do. That's a tough one to deliver. Well, what I'd say is that we're all different, yeah? We learn at different paces, and we've got different histories with money, yeah? I've lost the room now. Learn at different paces, yeah? And we've got different histories with money, different relationships with money, yeah? The material we're using for this series is the generosity practice. And that's the key word, practice. Because it's something that you have to make an effort with, something you have to make an effort to do in order to get better at it. And some of us require more practice than others. Yeah? So we're coming at it from different places. Let's acknowledge that. But let's go there. Let's use the T word. T for tithing. Giving 10% of income back to God. Now, some say that tithing is an Old Testament principle and Jesus came to establish a new covenant. So should we be concerned about it? Well, my response to that is yes. Because Jesus said he came to fulfill the law, not to destroy it. And if you think about it, Jesus gave up all the riches of heaven to come to earth to be born as a baby. He gave up far more than 10%. And it's been said from the front of this room in the last 12 months that people should give 10% of their income to the church as a good principle. I've also heard people say that when they get your money at the start of the month, take out 10%, give it to God, live on the rest. Now, if all it took was that to fix our relationship with money and finance, I might as well sit there now. Because you've just heard it. It's more than that, isn't it? It's more than that. I wouldn't disagree with those statements that were made, but I recognise for some, if you're not there, it just doesn't make sense. Or it sounds unachievable. You're thinking of your balance sheet in your head, I've got this much coming in, I've got that much going out. Taking 10% out means that bills won't be paid. I get it. When I started earning money and I'd tithe only to find the 90% didn't cover what I wanted it to. But that was the key thing. I look back and the problem there is financial management, because God says he'll provide our needs, not our wants. But you've got to get there. There was probably also a bit of a legalistic mindset there. You've got to give 10%. Rather than sort of seeing this giving tithing as embracing Jesus' teaching and seeing it as an act of worship and of faith, there's that perhaps legalistic side of it there. But the truth is, it is a real challenge for some people. Due to circumstances that we're in, giving up 10% just does not seem possible. You know what you've got coming in, you know what you've got going out, or perhaps your partner manages the money and they're not a Christian. How on earth do you explain to someone, you know that money that we got, and you know how like sort of we'd always like a bit more, well, I want to give 10% of what we have got coming in that way. It just doesn't make sense if you're not there. So this morning, as we talk about another series, as we talk about finance and money, don't feel belittled, don't feel told off. If your must pay outgoings, the things that you've got to pay, take up 90% of your income, for example, and all of a sudden trying to live off 90% is going to be a problem. Unless you've heard specifically from God that he'll provide, pay your bills. Pay your bills. You know, if you hear from God, I know that doesn't make sense, but I want you to give and I'll provide. Do that. And there's people here this morning who will testify to the fact that he has provided and he does provide. But if you've not heard that word, please don't put yourself under stress and pressure to do so. Now, some of you may criticise me for that, saying, Joe, where's your faith? You're the leader, where's your faith? Well, some of this is about getting people to understand the teaching of Jesus where they are. And we have different levels of faith in different areas. So if that 10% just doesn't seem right, keep it in mind. If you're thinking there's no way I can do that, keep that 10% figure in mind. And maybe start giving an amount which you can afford to. And at the same time, allow God into your finances. Allow God into your finances. Allow him to highlight those things which you're paying for maybe to find happiness, but actually they're bringing the opposite. Start there and be thankful you're in a position to give something back to God. Keep the 10% in mind. Ask God, take me on this journey. This is where I want to go. And be amazed at what God does. If at the other end of the scale, though, you are giving 10% very comfortably every week, every month, consistently, and you don't notice it, should you be giving more? If you're giving 20% and you don't notice it, should you be giving more? Now, at this stage, when we do say, Kev, Rach and I, talk about financing, the two elders disappear. No, Rachel's at work and Kev's looking after Nehemiah this morning. We don't know who tithes here at Junction 10. We don't know how much, unless you've gone out of your way to tell us. And please, we really don't want or need to know that. If you tithe via bank transfer or we claim gift aid on your tithe, then the church finance person will know who gives and how much, but it doesn't come back to us. We know how much money comes in overall. We know how many kind of standing orders there are, but more detail on that we don't know. So don't think that tithing gets you special treatment here at Junction 10. Now, I've heard church leaders say, oh, we don't want to lose them. They're a good giver. Well, we don't know that here. So you may be very generous, but if you're a pain in the neck, it won't stop us from praying you go away. I mean, the Lord leads you to somewhere new. No, I'm only joking. We don't pray that. In all seriousness, as we talk about this, remember we're referring to it as practice, the generosity practice. It's not something that gets sorted immediately. We need to let Jesus into our finance. We need to talk about gradually, because we talk, don't we, about gradually becoming more like Jesus, more Christ-like. And that applies in other areas of our life, so why should this be any different? Over the course of this series, allow yourself to become more like Jesus in his approach to money through following his teachings, in the same way that we perhaps seek to be more like Christ in our compassion for others. Allow him to speak to you about becoming more Christ-like with our approach with money and finance. Because individuals, as we become more Christ-like in our compassion or in our approach to money, it will only strengthen us collectively here at the Church of Junction 10. And if you're thinking, this is going to be a challenge for me, this series, remember, Jesus speaks to us for our good, even if it's at our discomfort. Yeah? Just because you're feeling a bit icky, not sure, it's still Jesus speaking. And remember the title of the message, there is more joy in giving than receiving. So let's look then at what Jesus actually says. Turn with me, if you've got your Bibles, or it'll come up on the screen, to Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. It's titled Treasures in Heaven. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So with verses 19 and 20 in mind, does anybody remember the program Changing Rooms? I didn't really watch it, but from what I remember, they used to have a celebrity designer who used to go in and make somebody's room house over in a short period of time, 30 minutes to... What's that? Oh, Judith had them in her house. Who did you have, Judith? Oh, we can't remember who, but they were there. Judith was there as well. Were you pleased with the outcome? Okay, yes, so thumbs up to Change Rooms and Judy. But they used to go in and they used to kind of make things over. And one of the designers was called Linda Barker. Yeah, you may remember her. She was like runner-up on the Jungle program, second series, I think I read it was. Is it ringing any bells? Yeah. Anyway, she went into one house where the woman collected vintage novelty teapots. And Linda thought she'd come up with a novel way of displaying these on floating shelves. Yeah, a real centerpiece. Look at that. Fastened to the ceiling, strings between each shelf. Lovely. Except once they hung the shelves up and put the teapots on and the books, it proved to be too much weight for them all and it came crashing down to the floor, smashing the poor woman's entire teapot collection. What? If you're laughing, have a word with yourself. Hey, this poor woman. Her treasures were destroyed. Yeah? Quite a good representation of what Jesus is saying, yeah, about treasures being destroyed. I'm not saying Linda Barker's vermin or anything like that before. just rule that out there. But a picture of how our treasures on earth can so easily be destroyed. But notice as Jesus is saying that, he doesn't rebuke this impulse for wanting to store up treasure. That's not the problem. The problem is where we want to store it up. It's we want to store it up in the wrong place, i.e. on earth, rather than in heaven. And here, heaven doesn't mean the place where we go to when we die. In heaven, here was how the Hebrews in the first century said, in God and what he's doing on earth. So rather than us putting it in what we want, we need to store up our treasure in God and what he's doing here on earth. Going back to the passage, Jesus then says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So Jesus is saying, money's ultimately about our hearts. And one of his central insights is that our heart follows our money. You know, today we often think of it as the other way around, don't we? We think it's the opposite, that our money follows our heart. What we love, what we enjoy doing, what's in our heart, that's what we spend money on. But actually, Jesus is saying that it works both ways. Yeah, if you love something, you'll spend money on it, new guitars and things like that. But actually, we carry a fear because we know that we can lose it all in a moment. We store up our treasures on earth because we can lose them all. We never feel like there's going to be enough. But Jesus has an alternative way. He says in verse 22 to 23, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Back then, a healthy eye was a figure of speech. If you look in the NIV, there's a footnote after the word healthy. He says, the Greek for healthy here implies generous. And another one for unhealthy, which says the Greek for unhealthy here implies stingy. It was a way of saying there's two ways of looking at the world. You can have either an abundance mindset or a scarcity mindset. Now, an abundance mindset, if you've got one of these, you look at the world and you see abundance around. You see God as your father, your provider, yourself as his child. And life is a gift. It's his world, it's our father's world. It's got more than enough for everybody. If you look around and say with Jesus, look at the birds. Look at the creation. We live with a heart of gratitude towards God and generosity towards others. We receive what God gives us, you give out with joy. So in the first century, the Hebrew would say, you have a healthy eye, you have a healthy view of the world. The other side is a scarcity mindset. If you have one of these, you look at the world and you just see lack. Where's the father provider? I'm on my own in this. This world's dangerous. You know, resource is scarce and we've got to fight over it. We need to look after ourselves because, you know, nobody else is going to do that. You focus on what you've got and what you're scared of losing, not of what God can give. We can become consumed by fear and greed with this scarcity mindset. And in that scenario, Jesus would say, you have an unhealthy eye, a distorted view of the world. So there's different ways of seeing the world, isn't there? And money in particular. Because you can know two people who earn exactly the same amount of money, same cost of living, same responsibilities, but they can see the world in radically different ways. For one, they can say, I've got enough. Someone else, I need more. And that can be impacted by backgrounds or bringing in all sorts of things. But this morning, how do we see the world? How do we see the world this morning? If we had total confidence that God would provide for us, God would provide enough for us, would that change our relationship towards money and generosity? Because if we start to trust Jesus' vision of abundance, then God is our Father provider and his teachings on money start to make more sense. When we trust in him, we can move to a position where we don't worry. Where actually, we do seek the kingdom first. That we understand that it will be give. That we give and it will be given unto you. And we're free to be generous, move into generosity with what we have. But if we don't, if we read Jesus' teachings, as I said, you might be in a position where this doesn't make sense yet. And this all just sounds a little bit crazy and a bit foolish. Which is why Jesus goes on to say, because if we don't believe it, we can be overtaken by fear and greed. Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And some translations have that last word, rather than money, as mammon, which is an Aramaic word. And it's believed that Matthew left that word in maybe in Aramaic, because mammon was the name of the ancient Syrian god of wealth. It was Jesus' way of saying that money can become a rival god. Money can become a rival god. You know, we think, maybe we can think sometimes, money's money. Money's money. It comes, it goes. Is it good? Is it bad? But for Jesus, there's power in wealth. Wealth has got a power, and it can become very destructive. The God of Mammon's behind so much evil, injustice, war, racism, ecological disaster, much more. As people have this mindset of, we have to fight for our resources. We've got to protect what we need. And so Jesus says you can't serve both God and Mammon. Not that you shouldn't, that you cannot. It's impossible to serve both. So how do you resist that? Well, through Jesus and what he teaches, you resist that through practicing generosity. And we talked about tithing, but Jesus' teaching doesn't start with tithing or even being generous to the poor. For Jesus, it starts with who God is, because God is our Father. Jesus says we don't have to worry about what we'll eat or what we drink because, or what we wear, because God our Father will provide. And he's not only God the Father, he's God the Son and the Holy Spirit. He's a family in himself. Giving, focused on others, joyful, sacrificial, generous, loving. Generosity is within the three parts of God himself. Yeah? You got that? That each looks after. Generosity is there. So this one, do you see God as the most generous being in all reality? Billy Graham once said, if a person gets his attitude toward money straight, it will help straighten out almost every other area of his life, which is bang in line with Jesus' teaching from Matthew 6. Get your relationship with money right, and it will set your heart free. If we follow Jesus, it should change our relationship to money because it will change our hearts. That's why generosity is just far more than tithing or acts of big generous acts, as you said. Generosity is that everyday thing of, I'll buy that coffee, or the thing isn't there about sort of whatever that person wants next in the queue, I'll pay for it, I'll do that. It's about being generous with our money towards others, or being quick to forgive when we're hurt. Because as we said, it's not just about money. We're going to focus on that, but it's more than that. It's about our heart. But actually, it's about our heart, yes, but also researchers say for generosity to make us happier, it's got to be something which is ongoing. It's not just a one-off thing. It's a practice which we keep going back to. And the more you practice it, the more generous you become and the more free that you become from being enslaved by money and finance. So this morning, how can we be generous towards others? As I said, you go out with someone for a coffee, buy them a coffee. I heard someone say, a retired church leader, he went out for a meal with someone and they were saying, I'll pay. So the one of them paid, and the other one thought, the one who paid thought, I wonder what he'll do, because he was expecting to pay. So when it came to a tip, he was very generous with the tip towards the person who'd been serving them, because he was expecting to pay, well, I don't know, £60 for the meal, and he didn't have to do that. So rather than thinking, I'm £60 better off, it's like, well, I can use that. I can bless somebody else with that money. We've heard before about opportunities to sponsor children. Buy somebody lunch that you come across. Can we give any of our income away to the church, to the service here? Because as we practice generosity and as we make space for God in our hearts, he'll change our lives from the inside out. The only things that we're looking at, we call practices, and this is about adopting the teachings of Jesus into our everyday life. Not that it becomes a one-off thing, but actually it becomes just part of who we are and how we do and how we live lives. Because generosity is a practice which transforms us. We can move us from that scarcity mentality to abundance mentality. From a fear of lack to trust in our Father Provider. From worry over our future to peace with whatever comes. And from the endless desire for more to the enjoyment of what we have. From grasping to gratitude and from misery to joy. That's what generosity can do in us and in our hearts. So we just pray as it brings to close, as the band come back. So Lord, as we spend these next few weeks talking about generosity and hearing and taking on board your teachings, Lord, I pray for everyone here that there's a desire to learn and to open up this part of their lives to you. That this isn't something that we can necessarily get sorted overnight, that it's a journey that we're going on. It's called a practice. It's something which can take time, something which may take years of unlearning maybe to get to where you want us to be. But the important thing is that we open ourselves to you, and with each step we become more and more like you. I just pray for everybody here, Lord, those who are perhaps in a financial difficulty at the moment. Lord, there's resources that we can point people to if needed. There's support available for those who need that at this time. And for those who maybe a bit complacent, thinking, yeah, I'll give my 10%, I'm sorted. Lord, challenge us as to what you gave, the sacrifice that you made, what you gave up for us. Amen.